We'll do a little test, and then we'll listen to it to make sure it's working.
All right.
So why don't you identify yourself and tell me what union you're with?
All right. I'm Ann Jokums, and I'm in the Carpenters Union, Local 608, New York City.
And how long have you been a member of the union?
Almost 5 years.
And so why don't we listen now and see. Okay, so identify yourself one more time.
All right. I'm Ann Jokums, and I'm in the Carpenters Union, Local 608, New York City.
How long have you been a carpenter?
Over 10 years.
So, and you've been in New York City for 5 years?
Yes.
So how did you decide that you wanted to become a carpenter? How did that happen?
Well, it sort of evolved out of really the overall vision of just wanting to change the world and manifesting in this particular way of being drawn to non-traditional work after I graduated from college, and we were in a recession and I couldn't really find anything using my college degree, and so the traditionally men's jobs paid more, and so I gravitated towards that kind of work. But because I didn't have any skills, I ended up, like, you know, managing a gas station and being a laborer and doing landscaping and then doing building repairs and then getting more skilled and then wanting to be self-sufficient, getting caught up in sort of back to the land. Each of us should enable ourselves to know how to do everything, especially as women and feminists. So then I helped friends build a house. So I got interested in it that way. And then I got politicized, sort of just hearing about unions, just hearing about in the community, really on the street, and the political nature of the pure union movement appealed to me. So then I tried to get in a union apprenticeship.
Where were you when this was happening?
Oh, that was in Kansas City in the late 70s.
So there are unions in Kansas City?
Yes, but it's not really what I would call a union town. And I wasn't successful in, even though I passed the first test and everything and got interviewed.
How did you hear about it?
I just tracked it down myself, you know, like it wasn't even advertised. I just decided that that's what I wanted to do. And
so how many people did you have to call, and how many places did you have to go before you found out about the process?
Probably just the employment center, the job service center, and then asked them where it was. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And then went there. And then it was like a charade, you know, because they didn't really take me seriously ever. I didn't feel that they ever really took me seriously, and I never felt like they honestly ever considered accepting me, and they didn't.
Now, you've only been in 10 years,
mm-hmm.
So that's 1980.
Well,
but the big push was in the mid-70s, so they still weren't up to snuff in Kansas City.
No. Well, they weren't up to snuff, and then I moved to New York, mm-hmm. in 1981.
Well, tell me first how you got into the apprentice program, or did you?
No, I didn't.
Did.
No, I didn't. And so I went to, while I was in Kansas, I went to a CETA program in building, in carpentry,
mm-hmm.
in Kansas City, Kansas Potech. I did carpentry and worked in building maintenance also.
So was that a serious program? You actually learned real skills?
Yeah, they did house building. Although the teacher, I mean, it was, you know, again, in theory it was a good idea. The teacher was horrible and didn't really, you know, impart the skills very well to the men or the women. And
how many women were in your program?
Well, I was the only one.
Oh.
I was the only woman.
Mm.
And he just did a bad job.
So did you end up helping each other learn?
No, I feel like I just read the books, mm-hmm. and just, you know, like, sort of like muscled it out, you know, just read the books myself and tried stuff. And I'll never forget, like, the first table saw lesson was really ridiculous, because it was, when I look back on it, I just cringe that I still have all my fingers and everything, because he sort of like said, okay, you try it, and he didn't tell you any of the safety rules or anything, and he just set you loose on the thing. And, you know, naturally, you know, the thing bound, and it did a crazy kickback that if you'd been hit by it could have killed you. But I did manage to survive it, and then, you know, eventually just floundered through, you know, and, you know.
Where did you, when you were doing this, where did you get support?
I don't feel like I really did get support. I got it long distance, you know, starting in 1981, I started getting it just from this magazine that came out of San Francisco, Tradeswoman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I got all of my support, really, you know, because I didn't even know any other women that were doing it. Although I looked all the time for it, and when I would go to women's festivals and stuff, I would always go to the, you know, tradeswoman workshops, mm-hmm. and I really sought it out, but it was, you know, really slim pickings,
mm-hmm.
and not too much of it.
So what kind of job, you had the vocational program, so how much of your time did that take in terms of classroom and on-the-job training?
Well, I went all day, mm-hmm. every day, for 4 months to that particular school, and then I worked like 20 hours a week for this guy that owned all these old houses, just sort of doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the trying to learn on your own, which is what I've really always done without any really good guidance, except for 1 year when I went to community college, where I had a woman teacher, and I feel like she taught me really in the year everything, you know,
yeah.
all the right ways of doing it. But other than that, I feel like it's just been from books and, you know, what I could like really, quote, steal, unquote, from them. Because I was never able to form that kind of relationship with them where they felt like sharing anything with me.
Mm-hmm. What about the employer who hired you to work on the old houses? How did that happen?
He was just this, it was sort of like passed down from, you know, a friend in the community that, it was sort of a sham too though, because really we didn't know what we were doing. It was another woman and myself, and this guy had inherited like 80 old Victorian houses from his mother, and they were in total disrepair. And it was sort of like he didn't really want to put any money into them, but he had to do something. You know, like he had to change locks when he kicked people out and patch holes, not let the roof leak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Really some stuff he, you know, but it was like from plumbing to electrical, and we, you know, were just reading in the book and trying to figure all this stuff out, and again we were lucky we didn't kill ourselves,
yeah.
and anybody else,
mm-hmm.
but you know, that was, you know, still somehow or other I still remained interested in it, to, you know, and then wanting to specialize, always wanting to be really good at it, still wanting to be really good at it, but you know, without really any you know, like day-to-day, on-the-job support for it.
So that CETA program has been wiped out, but how many of you from your class went on to work at what you were theoretically learning?
That part I don't know,
yeah.
you know?
Mm-hmm. So then what happened after you finished that program? You're working for the building maintenance, and then what was your next job?
Then I moved to New York.
Uh-huh. What made you decide to come to New York?
Well, it was really just a relationship that I had upstate. And
so
you
came to the big city.
Yeah, well, no.
Upstate,
yeah, I never dreamed I would come to the big city,
yeah.
actually.
I
ended up upstate and tried, you know, got jobs, but like they were all like non-union and they lasted like 2 to 3 months, each one, you know, about three of them. And it was just like, you know, scraping together, then I'd get laid off, scraping, you know, just walking onto construction mm-hmm. sites and saying, you know.
So were they like office construction or housing construction?
One of them was like building a metal truck stop, and one of them was residential, and the other one was restoring old houses again, yeah.
So you just had to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
That was hard?
Yeah, that got, yeah, that was really exhausting. And always being the only woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then ended up in another program. I think CETA was gone, but I think this was CETA, though, again. I got this other CETA thing where I went full-time every day for 9 months to this carpentry program in Onondaga BOCES, which mm-hmm. that was a pretty good teacher.
It's near Syracuse.
Yeah, yeah. And
what was good about it?
Well, I love school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, school
yeah.
was great mm-hmm. because there's not the pressure to produce, mm-hmm. and you can sort of the freedom to find your way through it. You know, in a way, I think it's more advantageous than the apprenticeship program, because, except that it's not real life job situations, I guess, but it gives you more creative license to like explore more interesting ways of mm-hmm. doing things without a boss. You know, without your job being
yeah.
on the line, you know.
So this was, it was all focused on carpentry.
Right.
It was supposed to be all the different aspects, like finishing work and...
Right. And then woodworking.
Woodworking.
Yeah, and then I fell in love with woodworking and decided that maybe that's what I'd like to do.
Uh-huh.
So, Yeah, I went to a community college for a year. I just, you know, I read about this woman in a magazine and decided, yeah, I'd like to learn from her. You know, maybe that would be different. And I went there, and it was the best thing I ever did for myself.
And that's the woman you mentioned before.
Yeah, but that was only 1 year, mm-hmm. and I only ended
Were
up with...
Were you the only woman?
No, there was a couple others.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she really, really was great for us,
mm-hmm.
you know. And
unfortunately... Was she great? What kinds of support? Aside, I mean, the teaching and the really imparting skills, which
Yeah, she just knew how to. Yeah, she just knew how to do it. She connected with you. She believed that you could learn, and therefore you believed that you could learn, and you trusted her that she wasn't going to let you cut your hand off. Which I never did trust any of the men to. You know, like I just figured that you know, they might get a thrill out of that if that happened or something. You know, but I guess just really the trust issue. And she was so highly skilled herself that she was a perfect role model for seeing that you could do it. And my only regret of that whole thing is that it was only 1 year instead of about 6 years,
yeah.
which I feel is really what you...
A real apprenticeship.
Right, right. But
so
you can't stay in school forever.
You were up there and you were... then you finished that program.
Right.
After 1 year. And then
right.
what did you go on to?
Then I got an apprenticeship with the National Trust for Historic Preservation, which you already needed building skills to do, but this was sort of like supposed to be a more specialized thing. And it was a real sham, unfortunately, also. It was supposed to be a 3-year program, and it was at one of the historic properties, Lyndhurst in Tarrytown. You know, doing all of the trades again, you know, but woodworking was my favorite, but they didn't let me do very much of that, and they mostly made me do masonry. And it paid so horribly, and the area was so expensive to live in, that as soon as I had an opportunity to go as a restoration craftsperson at Central Park, I did that,
wow.
which was a really great job.
Our Central Park.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great job, but it
How
paid from me again. It was on the bulletin board
mm-hmm.
at the apprenticeship school. But yeah, I was working in the rounds. It was incredibly creative. It was a bunch of artists and stuff that really, really worked there and did it. And you know, rebuilt all the summer houses in the park and rustic architecture is what it was, and it was fascinating. With again, the thing that appealed to me about it was there wasn't any big push for production.
You
know,
you felt like you were building something that mattered.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. It was really great, but it was non-union,
uh-huh.
and you know, sometimes you'll be working like side by side with union people, so that was like sort of annoying because, I mean, the truth of the matter was is that we really worked harder and got paid less.
Mm-hmm. Because you cared more.
Well, we cared more, but also we didn't have as much job security.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, yeah, yeah.
Were there any women on the site?
Not when I started, mm-hmm. but I personally recruited several. There was a woman's bookstore at the time, so every time I heard they were hiring, I just went and put the ad up myself and did get two other women hired, and that was great.
That's pretty creative.
Yeah, yeah, I always do that. I'm still doing that every time I hear their hirings.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't worked out because now on this job, I've been there 5 years and I'm still the only woman. But
So you finished that job, came to an end, or?
Yeah,
you heard of it?
Well, I heard about the city civil service
mm-hmm.
things.
Now, when did you get into the union?
Well, I'm still not in the union now. Now I heard about these city civil service things, and this is the only way I got in the union. Oh, and then I tried again when I was back in Syracuse to get in, and again got put on a waiting list and couldn't get in, trying again for an apprenticeship in the early 80s and couldn't get it. And then I did everything I said. Then when I came here, I took, you know, saw the city civil service test advertised and took it and rated highly and got interviewed and got the job. Then if you pass a 1-year probation, they have to let you in the union because they, you know, some agreement. I think it's the only municipality in the whole country that's that way.
Is there a 1 out of 3 rule or something?
There is a 1 out of 3 rule, but luckily, somehow or other, I just feel like it's, in a way, even though I don't have a lot of job satisfaction, anyhow, I feel like it was one of the luckiest breaks of my life that they inadvertently hired me, you know, because it's highly competitive now, well, now especially,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, there's probably 1,000 people that would want the job, even though it's far from perfect,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, that's, you know, I got in the union at the journey level status, having amassed all my education and eking out my job experience on
mm-hmm.
my own, because it's a hefty experience requirement.
So you are the only woman carpenter for the Board of Ed
yeah.
in New York City?
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
What a distinction. Wow. So, what was the response of the your coworkers when you started at that job?
Again, it was horrendous. It was really bad because, well, for one thing, it was really hard just figuring out New York City, you know. But the corruption, I mean, I can't underestimate the corruption aspect of it enough, you know.
Even how, the city?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd almost say especially, you know. But because I didn't work outside union mm-hmm. in New York ever, so I only worked city union. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just the scam that they sort of have going is, you know, really, really horrible. I feel like they just did everything to try and get rid of me. They did try and get rid of me, and I did have to file a grievance to keep my job, because they, you know, they just said bad attitude. They called it everything, you know, mm-hmm. from incompetence, bad attitude, insubordination, everything they could think of. They mm-hmm. just like.
And how did you fight that? You documented things, or what kinds of ways did you?
Yeah, I documented things, and basically I was a test case. In a way, I caught them unaware.
Test case that's still going on.
That's still going on, right. But in a way, the advantage that I had, although it doesn't seem like an advantage to me, but I guess it really was in a way, is that, you know, they didn't know what to do. They didn't really know how. They did a very poor job of getting rid of me. They should have been able, if they were smarter, they should have been able to get rid of someone that they didn't want. But I just, you know, sort of just strong-armed them right back, you know. And they didn't have any, because this is the whole thing, because then once you pass that year of probation, they sort of like got you forever. You know, you've got tenure. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, it's a weird situation because there you are, and you know, they all just think that, you know, they inherited you, and, you know, it's just an overall not that good of a situation, you know. Except for with very few exception, I feel like most of them just wish I wasn't there, you know.
So what kind of jobs do you work on?
Well, I was when I was a field mechanic until October. I went from school building to school building, doing maintenance and repairs on the schools. But what it was is, you know, I really, like, I was the only one that didn't have a partner. They would always give me, like, the least skilled and the heaviest schlepping. You know, like, again, very little woodwork, which is what I like. I asked them to put me in the shop, and they wouldn't do that. Anything that they sensed that I wanted, they did the exact opposite. And they generally went out of their way to make my life miserable. You know, like, they transferred me from a very far point away from my home, and because they usually try and accommodate you mm-hmm. if they like you, you know, let you work close to your home and everything. And just exclusion, you know, like not being told about parties, like, mm-hmm. You know, just hearing about everything after it happened, never really being included, and always getting the bad jobs and everything. And then the supervisor's test came up, and I did really well on that. And I should have sued them 3 years ago when they started, 2 years ago when they started calling from the list for the job, just on affirmative action, just because I was the only woman on the list in the whole city, citywide, and in my agency. But I decided to be patient because, you know, I'd had sort of, I was still reeling from the repercussions of the last grievance, because it really takes a toll on you to fight back. Too. So now they made me, to try and sort of appease me, they made me this acting supervisor. But again, I mean, it's incredible because basically I have no responsibilities.
And you're in an office?
Yeah, I'm in an office. Yeah. And if, like, if
what
my.
What are you supervising?
Nothing. If my boss stuck out his foot, he could kick me. It's like, it's such a convoluted situation. Now they again transferred me. Well, I asked to be transferred to Queens, but I meant as a field mechanic. But then they sort of threw in this incentive that if I would do this, I could have an extra half hour a day overtime. So I did it thinking that everything's a learning experience and trying to see it as sort of a positive thing. And they said it would only last 2 or 3 months, and then the line would open and I would get the title. But that, you know, now it's been like since October, and I still haven't. And now I've given them, in my own mind, another October deadline. And if by October they don't appoint me to the supervisor position, I am going to file a grievance for it. Again, so then, you know, the fight will start again, because once you file a grievance and they know you did that, and then you have to work with them every day, then it's like, you know, well, at least it's more out there. But I sure have a hard time getting along with them, you know. I mean, some of them it's okay. None of them are, you know, very. It's just not a normal. I don't know how to describe it. How it's such an abnormal situation of how you can just like bang your head against the wall day in and day out trying to figure out what is it that doesn't connect. And then you can meet some tradeswoman somewhere, and in 5 minutes she knows exactly what you mean. But these guys, you know, you can explain it for, you know, months, and they just say, oh, you got a chip on your shoulder, or, you know, you take things the wrong way, or they just, you know, do all this stuff. But
a thousand reasons why
it's your fault, right?
It's not the system that obviously is at fault when you look at a system where they have one woman.
Right. And, right.
So that that's going to be a tough experience day in and day out.
Yeah, yeah, it really wears me thin. And everybody that I care about in my personal life has told me that, why don't I try some other field of work, you know, and don't be a martyr, you only live once and all that. But it's a cause.
You feel pride in your craft.
Right.
And you want to use it.
Exactly, exactly.
And you have job security. And a good job, well-paying, I assume.
Yeah.
Why should you walk away?
Right.
You're the ones who are at fault.
Right. Well, yeah, and I always say we don't need one less. We need 5,000 more women. But
I understand that Joseph Fernandez has called New and talked about using them as a source for hiring, for the new hiring that they're going to be doing for building tradespeople for the Board of Ed. Because it's part of his, he started saying right when he came here that he needed a lot more people. He has fewer in New York City than he had in Miami. And
right.
It's a much bigger system.
Right.
And then we were talking in meetings about writing him a letter and saying, you know, what about women?
Mm-hmm.
And so then right at that point, I learned that he called me the Christian Employment for Women. So do you have any hopes that something will come of this, or
well, yes,
happening?
I do have hope that it will, but I feel like it's all takes so long of a time, you know, because there's so many different layers. I mean, like the chancellor, who, you know, is an educated man and in a very high position, it's great that he noticed and that he said that, but I feel like it will be many, many years before it filters down to the tangible level, because like I know that they're hiring right now, and I know that they are, well, there's no women on the current list, so I know that it's going to be all men.
Is that because women haven't been taking a test?
Yeah, because they have to have 5 years experience before they can take the test, and you know, it's hard to get that, so that's the excuse that they use. But the thing is if they really wanted to hire women, they could have set up an apprenticeship program or an on the job training thing. They could, they definitely can do anything they want. And if they wanted women and minorities, they could have them tomorrow. But instead, they just, you know, give lip service to it, but nothing really has changed as far as the system's helping that to happen.
So now you're in the union,
yeah.
Job. What does that mean?
Well, it's a very strange situation. And in order to find out what that meant, because then I was so excited to be a union member, you know, because politically I really believe in the union, the pure concept of the union, which I think doesn't exist, but is another goal to strive for. So, you know, I'd go to meetings and stuff, but it was horrible because it was a huge smoke-filled auditorium with hundreds of people.
Now this is for your local.
Yeah, local 608, right.
So you don't have separate Board of Ed meetings for the car.
Right, right.
Okay,
and
so
I didn't know anyone, and it was all men. I mean, there are a lot of women in that union, but you never see them.
They're all struggling.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And these guys that look like, you know, they're all clean and in suits, and they stand up in the front, and they just
I assume that's the union leadership.
Yeah, and they just, you know, talk to themselves really without any input from the audience, except for it seems like there might be like a few planted in the audience that they let have a voice, but then if anybody is dissident,
they have mics back? I mean,
no, and if you
shout out.
Yeah, and if you disagree with them, it's almost like a monarchy or something, because they, you know, they don't allow any dissension, and they just like almost bounce you out of there if you don't say what they like. And and I couldn't imagine saying anything anyway at the meetings, because, you know, it's so overwhelming. because I don't have any support. You know, if I had a group of people, you know, that I was hooked up with, it might
have
be difficult.
Have you tried any ways of linking up with other women who are in the union?
I have.
Working boards or anything. How do you do that?
Right, but I guess I haven't dogged it persistently enough because.
But what ways have you tried?
Well, the thing that I did was is I, you know, I seek out tradeswomen support all the time. And so, you know, anytime I hear anything about that, I do it. Like I joined CLU and I joined AUD and I joined New York Tradeswomen and I joined, there's another tradeswoman group who's.
United Tradeswomen.
Yeah, United Tradeswomen. So I joined all of them. And they all, and we all talk about together doing this thing with the union. But the union is like, it's very hard to do it. As a matter of fact, just today, when I knew, because I knew I was going to be having this interview, I did write a letter to one of the guys in the union saying, suggesting some of these ideas about why don't we have a women's committee and how about a bulletin board and let's put women's issues in the newsletter regularly, because I was so ecstatic about this issue of Carpenter Magazine having a whole page on tradeswomen. So, you know, hopefully something will come of it, but it's just a long struggle.
So, who does that letter go to?
Well, I sent it to this guy, Ray O'Kane, and the only reason I sent it to him is because I don't even know what his position is. I think he's sort of a low-level assistant, but...
In the district council.
Right. But he does the newspaper, mm-hmm. And so I wanted something in the newspaper. I wanted the thing in the newspaper about my graduation from the Cornell program, because I heard about that. So in order to find out about the unions, that's why I went to school for the Trade Union Women's Studies program for a year to learn about it.
How did you decide to go to that?
I heard about that from the women in New York in the Trade Women's Support Group, mm-hmm. like Cynthia Long and, you know, Barbara Trees. And
so what was your experience at Cornell?
It was wonderful. It was, just the greatest thing. Yeah. Just for me, it was just being around women. You know, I specifically chose the women's program for that reason, because I believe women learn better with each other and from women teachers. And, you know, all the teachers were just brilliant. And, you know, it was just a very positive learning environment. Like, everybody was really nice and really warm, and you always felt good. And it was like an aberration from the outside world here, just going there, because it, you know, made you feel normal again. Because all day long, you just feel like, you know, it's got to be you, because it's everywhere. And there's never any break in the wall. If you never get any support saying it's not. Yeah. So then when you go there and you hear everybody saying, you know, what are you kidding me? You know, those guys really are jerks and all that. Then, you know, you feel validated. Yeah.
So you were in the certificate program.
Yes.
So
yeah.
What courses did you?
Writing skills and an overall view of the labor movement and labor history, labor law, collective bargaining, and one other one that just eluded me. I can't remember that last one.
So when did you finish up with that?
In June of 1990, just this past June. Yeah.
So,
I was trying to figure out how being in the union works with being a city employee, and that's the part that even though I studied in school for a year, I couldn't really figure it out, because it's almost like when you call the educational director of the union for information, which I've done, and I've met with him personally, trying to get my foot in the union door.
Is that Charles
Fien? Yeah, he just. Sort of says, he just tries to appease you. He just sort of says, look, you know, you have a good job, just don't worry about it. And even the guys on the job, they're so, for the vast majority of them are very apolitical about the union, and they just feel like, you know, why do we even have to pay them dues? You know, we got a good job.
What about issues of, like usually on the work site, issues come up that they want somebody to deal with.
Right, they don't come up. I mean, just recently, it's the only issue that ever came up. No issue ever came up because it's so corrupt and it's taken care of in such a backhanded way that there's not only no organization, but everybody's just basically floundering on their own. And you figure out ways to, you know, make your life easy. And the way you do that is by doing favors for people. And, you know, it's a real club that way.
Like a lot of individuals who are trying to look out for their own
exactly
skin and trying to do what they have to do to just and
And it's been that way forever.
The whole idea of being as a collective kind of approach to.
Right.
It falls by the wayside. And you're working in very isolated kinds of situations, or?
Yeah, always. I am, although then occasionally you do get this group effort, like if there's a big project that needs to be done, they do pull everybody together and you kind of get a sense of how everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nobody really, because I've talked to them about the union and organizing, nobody really feels any need for it. And except for very recently, there was this instance with one of the supervisors where something happened to him and he felt like he was going to be drug onto the carpet. And he got Charlie Fanning down there, and this is like the first time in the history of the Board of Education to, he got Charlie Fanning down there to like plead his case on the rug. You know, he wasn't going to go on the carpet by himself, you know. And basically Charlie just lambasted management and blamed management for everything. And of course, naturally there was, you know, nobody ever talks about the corruption that goes on in the rank and file also, which has gone on from the beginning of time and been a huge cover-up itself.
You know, types of like feather bedding kind of, you know, just taking advantage of time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in a big way that you can hardly probably not even imagine. I'd never seen anything like it.
So, the union, it doesn't really act in your typical ways on your job. And how, the only kind of way that you see the union as a force is if somebody goes to the union meeting. And that's when you see the union. They don't. You have shop stewards?
Well, yeah, that's another corrupt sort of thing, you know, because then I heard there were shop stewards, but they never did anything. Like, I never had any meetings, and when I was having trouble, the shop steward was, like, so horrendous, I couldn't even talk to him at all in the beginning. And, you know, so then I transferred to a different borough and everything, and that borough didn't have any shop stewards at all. And that's when I decided I was going to Cornell. I decided, well, being a shop steward might be good, a good way to get involved, learn more, you know, maybe make some connections and stuff. So I went to see Charlie Fanning, and that's when I asked him how he'd be one. He just appointed me. I said, well, that doesn't feel very good because nobody I work with knows. So then I thought, well, I could just tell him. So then I told him, and they said, well, we don't need any. And then this issue happened, and then with the supervisor, and then they all of a sudden came up with these shop stewards that represented everybody, but here I was, that I never voted. You know, they had elections everywhere, but I never heard of the elections. And I know one black man that said that he wanted to run, and they pretty much said, well, you know, you can't, because, you know, we're also racist and everything. Yeah, they pretty much said that to him, you know. So he called me, and he was a little upset about that, but they wouldn't even let him run, wouldn't even let him put his name on the ballot. So,
he made any common cause with him?
Oh, yeah. There's two black men that I like pretty well. That, you know, basically have been through very, almost identical experience to me.
Would you say that problems with hiring minorities in the Board of Ed is a problem also?
Yeah.
What's the ratio?
Definitely. Well, there's more minority men than there are women, but I'd say it's 95% white men. You know, and 4.5% minority men and 0.5 or less women. You know, so I think it's a little easier for the minority men, but all of the women that I know, that like I know an electrician's helper, and I do know one minority woman who's an electrician's helper. But there's three other women; they're all white. So there's that one minority woman, but. You know, they have even, of course, the double burden.
So what's your status as shop steward now?
Oh, yeah. So then there was a meeting. So then all of a sudden, the first time in the history of the Board of Ed, they decided to have a shop stewards meeting because it's been changing. Since the system is being computerized and the guys, I mean, this is incredible how they use the union to sort of like push forward their corruption. Because since the system is being computerized and they're being held more accountable, they're starting to be held more accountable, everybody's in an uproar about it. Because nobody wants to be held accountable, because they never have been. And so now they're talking about workers' rights. And see, this is a real conflict with me, because I believe in workers' rights, but in order to be a worker, you have to work. First, you know. So it's sort of hard. Yeah. So these guys that don't work are now like asserting their rights to not work. And it's, you know, I mean, it's just in bizarre. And so they had the shop stewards meeting, and I went because, you know, I'm a self-appointed shop steward. Well, Charlie Fanning appointed me, but the guys particularly this one guy, I guess that I had bad blood with before, I mean, he just like didn't allow me at the meeting. I mean, he asked me to leave and everything in order to not make a scene. Charlie Fanning said, well, just let her stay as a guest this time. And so then I'm so unassertive. I said, I was furious because I feel like Charlie Fanning sold me down the river because he should have said, I appointed her as a shop steward. She stays. Right. Mm-hmm. And she's going to be vocal. But instead, I just like, after I was designated a guest, I felt like I couldn't say anything because now I'm the guest. And nobody, I didn't have any backing anyway. So, you know, why say anything? Because who was I representing? And then the guy that was supposedly representing Queens, it's just, I mean, it's just incredible who they picked to, you know, be the shop steward because they can't really articulate anything for you. Mm-hmm. So then, as a sort of a real appeasement, Charlie Fanning made me the backup to this shop steward in Queens. But it's, you know, it's a sham because, you know, the guy doesn't want me. He's not going to tell me anything. And so then that's when he told me about the meeting. Then they had a few more shop steward meetings about them all being held accountable and how mad they are about it. And then he held a general membership meeting, and he told me when it was, and so I showed up right on time and everything. When I went down, that's when they all laughed and said, oh, we only have one meeting in, you know, 25 years, and you missed it, you know? And so then I made the guy tell me what went on. And it's just, they're just not serious about it, you know, except that when they feel like they're not going to be able to get away with it anymore, that's what they're serious about, but they're not serious about, you know, they're not serious people or something, you know?
Well, I know that you've been trying to organize women in the Board of Ed who are in the trades.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you start doing that, and what's been the result of that?
Well, that was really very exciting at first, because as soon as they made me this acting supervisor and put me in this office environment where, I mean, I was under their watchful eye, it's true, but basically I felt like, you know, I can do anything I want here because that's what everyone else does. I decided to, you know, use the telephone and for my own purposes, which my agenda is always to increase the numbers of women in the trades. And so I just started doing outreach to as high up in the Board of Ed as I could go. I wanted to go all the way to the top, up to Amy Linden, who's the director of the Division of School Facilities. I mean, she's like, not the director, but anyway, the highest manager there is. And I didn't get that high because, you know, this other woman sort of like interceded, but I said that we needed a liaison for tradeswomen, you know, because I knew of all these tradeswomen and they had particular needs, and how come every single one of them experienced all these same problems, which I talked to them and they had, you know, these five that I could talk to, except for the two that every time they saw me, they ran away. But everybody else just said, you know, again, like within 5 minutes, it was a shared common experience of all the oppression and everybody trying to get rid of them and nobody including them and treating them as equals. So what I was trying to do was create the position for myself, mm-hmm. this liaison position, just to give my job responsibilities more meaning. It would be more interesting work for me if part of my job was to talk to women and improve their lot and set things up for mm-hmm. them, which, you know, I would have had, since I don't have any responsibilities, it would have been something good to do. But they saw the danger in that, and they appointed somebody else to do that, which now, she's somebody who's really like too busy to do it, mm-hmm. you know, and she hasn't really got the tradeswoman issue at heart. I mean, she's a nice woman, mm-hmm. but she's not very politicized.
Well, what kind of process did you use to pull it together, aside from talking to individuals, and how, what kind of accountability system do you have for dealing with her?
Well, not very good, you know. It all seems like almost like luck in that this first meeting happened with, you know, one of the plant managers and myself were really the only women. Like, they wanted to keep it small because I feel like it's almost like management wants to find out your angle and then figure out how to keep you quiet so that you can't really get organized.
Cut you off of the path.
Right. So that's what happened is, you know, it was really three members from management and us two. And we met, you know, a couple of times and, you know, made this agenda and set out all these elaborate goals that we had and everything. And, you know, meanwhile, my wheels were spinning on, you know, how can this thing grow and how can we include more people and everything? And their wheels were spinning on, you know, how can we put this thing off and,
yeah.
you know, not upset these women too much. But
so you did have one meeting?
Yeah, two meetings. Okay. You know, we had two meetings. And then that was it. And then they said they were going to, you know, do this survey. They're going to survey all the women and all the minority men employed in the Division of School Facilities about their experiences with harassment.
Now, have you seen the survey yet?
I saw the survey, but they didn't distribute it. They only gave this rough draft to the five of us at the meeting, and they never really did it.
Feedback.
Right. No, well, it was the one they were going to use. And they said, like, in the next paycheck, they were going to give everybody a copy of the EEO policy, give this survey, and they were going to do, no, they were going to do private surveys. She was going to set up appointments, this liaison that was created was going to set up appointments with everyone and do this survey. And it just never really, you know.
Well, people would feel more threatened, wouldn't they, if they had to be called in.
Well, that's it. And then once you, yeah, because that was some of the women.
What happened to the idea of putting it in the paycheck? That seems like a good idea.
They just didn't do it.
Well, so what's the process to hold them? I mean, they say they're going to do these things, so what kind of ways are you holding them accountable?
Well, it's hard for me to be assertive, too. It's hard for me to say, because I'm trying to figure out, I have such a history of not getting along with people, that I'm trying to figure out more effective ways of communicating other than saying, I'll sue, or, I'll complain, or, it's positive, assertive behavior is not my forte, although I'm trying to sort of like learn it. So to me, it's hard to say to somebody, why didn't you do that? It sounds like, it feels too assertive, or, then I have to think of some nicer way to say it. And basically, I just haven't said it yet, And so I've just tried to figure out other ways.
When are you going to?
Yeah, well, I figured out other ways to do. So what I did was, then I used the group that we had to say, what I did was I asked her if I could get loan time off from the job, if I could, do all these, any speaking engagements I could find, could I just go do those instead? Like, instead of meeting with them or working in-house, it was sort of like, well, maybe go out then. And so they did say, yeah, they said I could do that.
So you've done some speaking at schools, right?
Yeah, I haven't really. It was really a sort of an effort that didn't work out. I set up two times, but one time I just went and visited. I mainly visited with the teachers and didn't talk to the kids too much at all. And the other time the teacher canceled it. But
the first time was to talk to the teachers, and what did they have useful questions, or did they really seem that they wanted to know?
The teacher was great. It was a program at Central Park East School, and it was a carpentry program for elementary students, which was fascinating to me that you could get them at that young age, and it's a wonderful program, and that's all, she's doing it, and it's great, but there should be more like that,
And then the other program was canceled.
Yeah, and the other one was canceled, and that's another thing, like the schools are just such a mess, because it was canceled because she said that some of the teachers are weird too, but this particular teacher who happened to be the sex equity coordinator was at school in the Bronx, and she just said that, she just, the kids just all ran out of class and there wouldn't be anybody to listen or something like that, That's too bad. That's what she said.
So now you have a possibility of teaching in another program.
Oh, yeah. So then I was thinking of career change or trying to give my life more meaning that way. So I do have my license to teach carpentry, but I don't want to just teach boys. So then I know that there's laws on the books about sex equity in vocational education. So I sort of tried to track that down, find the sex equity coordinators. And I mean, I must have made easily over 100 phone calls trying to find someone who could know about this. But it was amazing because everybody just, every time I said girls in vocational education, everybody knew exactly about reverse discrimination, but nobody knows at all what discrimination is. So they were very astute on that issue. And basically the way it is that for the most part, the girls are still taking home ec and the boys are still taking shop, almost 99% of the cases. But then I found out about this Access for Women program that, in conjunction with New York City Technical College and the Board of Ed, that runs a, it's really training for the GED, I think, and, it is for job skills to get them in non-traditional jobs. And so I'm going to hopefully assist in that class because my job, that's a good thing about forming that committee, even though I haven't followed up on that. Now that I've sort of created this liaison, she said that I could be loaned out to do that, and she saw the connection of how that would be valuable from an educational standpoint for them and the Board of Education to, for me to participate in that program. So that'll be good.
That starts in the fall?
Yeah, that's for 12 weeks, one morning a week for 12 weeks in the fall. So I'm excited about that.
What about NEW? I know they have classes for women. And
NEW is a hard nut to crack. I haven't even been successful getting my name on their mailing list. I've tried for years. Now, I don't know what it is about my approach here, but I met with the director. Very first, I made an appointment with the director and met and said, you know, talked about my own personal isolation and how I basically muscled it out on my own, and now how wonderful it is to find this organization and everything, and how could I offer my services so we could have this relationship to achieve the goal, which is increasing the numbers of women in the trades. And, I thought it went pretty well, but I never heard from them again. So then I called again and to get my name on the mailing list. And they took my name and everything, but I never heard anything. Or, I called several times, and then I would get one thing, but it wasn't any ongoing, I couldn't ever really plug in, And now I know that they, every other Tuesday, they do have support groups, and I've been thinking of doing that, although that's not really my need to do with them, because I've already got New York tradeswomen to do that, and I sort of wanted to do something else, but I'm not sure what.
So at this juncture in your career, how are you feeling? You're feeling like you're still committed to trying to push on through and find ways that you can make a difference.
Right. Well, what happened is I almost was at complete burnout 2 weeks ago. And then I just had a two-week vacation. And it's amazing because I went and visited, when I was in San Francisco, I went and visited tradeswomen, which was an incredible experience, because for some reason or other, just sitting in that little office and talking to those women, it was just very energizing. And when I came back, about a million positive things had happened, from being asked to do this interview, to being asked to participate in the Access for Women program, to getting a job interview for a carpentry teacher position out in Western Suffolk, to getting our picture in the National Carpenter magazine, to all this stuff just sort of like snowballed. So once again, I feel like, not really giving up, but this thing about, it's all tied with self-esteem too, these career things about, what would I be most suited at, and how could I be the most effective at my job type of thing, so, yeah.
I would like it if you describe your experience in San Francisco, going to visit tradeswomen, and describe the office and what it's like out there, and how you think that the environment for women in San Francisco might be different in terms of, I understand that they have a lot more women in the trades in San Francisco.
They do.
What kinds of things are happening for them?
Yeah, they do, but that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to really get a sense of it, because I really had them on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have them on a pedestal, but it's a different kind of pedestal than what I thought it was, because I thought they were just like tradeswoman city. Mm-hmm. They have hundreds of tradeswomen, and they're so organized, and they have groups every night and everything. And I was really shocked to find out that they're actually, of course, naturally struggling also. And they have a very, very small space, which is a really great space, and they still have more than any other place else in the country has, and they have a computer and they're doing their grant writing and everything. But there was actually a point this year where they were afraid they were going to have to close just from lack of basic support from their members.
What's it like when you walk in there?
Well, it's very crowded, and but to me it felt like just a little haven, of course, because it's such an important issue to me that I've followed for so many years and stuff. But there was three women there, I think two paid and one volunteer, and they were just very incredibly nice women that right away, again within 5 minutes, understood all of my experiences immediately and were very warm and supportive, and I just got a lot from just the short visit there. It was, they couldn't have possibly been nicer or more supportive.
So you mentioned that the women out there are struggling too. Describe some of their issues that they're struggling with.
Well, I don't think it's as hard as here, but the thing of municipal jobs, which are really good jobs, there's not very many of them out there either, because they have the heavy experience requirement also to get in, so which that means that their retention is probably low. But again, out there, I think there's more of an entrepreneurial spirit. I think more women have their own businesses and are non-union. My feeling is that they're probably not in the union as much either.
But they're hiring women?
Yeah, there's lots of women-owned companies, with all women working, it seems to be,
And so What are some of the other things to do?
The whole thing right now is, well, this isn't just out there, but there's the whole tradeswoman movement is now organized because of, right,
okay,
the network is organizing now for this conference that might take place in 1991. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to decide what kind of role I want to take, like if I want to become, you know, try and get on the board, or if I just want to do some committee work, or, you know.
National Tradeswoman Network has a coordinator now.
Yeah.
But that position, I understand that amount of money from the Department of Labor Women's Bureau is running out, and so they've got things in motion, but it's a question whether or not they're going to be able to continue.
Mm.
So, but that's a real exciting thing to pull women from across the country together.
Mm-hmm. It's the most exciting thing to me.
Yeah.
But that's why
is that conference to come out of that? It's like a successor conference to Chicago.
Yeah, that's what it is. It will be the third international.
And where is it supposed to be?
I think it's going to be in New England somewhere.
Boston?
Yeah, maybe Boston. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about that, but somewhere in New England, I heard, was the rumor. But that's, you know, it would be great to get, like I knew in the Carpenter magazine that we just got all our pictures in, it said that some of the women's unions sent them. You know, and I remember I asked before I went, and they said, no, we don't do anything like that, you know, but to get to the point where all of the unions willingly supported their women in these endeavors would be a good goal to have, and that's, you know.
How many women attended? I know you attended a conference in New England for tradeswomen.
Yeah, that one, I think that one was about 150 women. Yeah.
150 women?
Yeah, I think that one was, and then Chicago was around 800. I think. So, see, even the numbers worldwide are small, but hopefully growing.
So the New England conference was good. What was your experience there?
Well, you know, it was just wonderful. I mean, I never have more fun than when I'm with a whole bunch of women like myself that have, you know, just like Molly's book, Stories of Success and Struggle, you know, of just all the workshops and learning from women and hearing other women's experiences, it's just totally empowering. You know, always sustained you for a while after you go back, you know.
I know that interviewing women who've been in the trades in New York City going back 10 years, a lot of the women have expressed the relationship that they had to United Tradeswomen when they were just starting out. And how important it was to them, and the role that it played. And what do you see for New York City and women in the trades to bring people together or people to get active in New York tradeswomen or United tradeswomen? Because from my perspective as an advocate for women, I see that women are isolated, they're having experiences that you're talking about, and there's a real need for them to get together. Both, not, you know, there's the tradeswomen, and there's also the women who are learning trades in company.
Right,
you know,
right.
And all these places where they're so isolated.
I know.
Set apart.
It's really hard, you know, and I don't have any answer to that. You know, it's a personal frustration of mine that we're not more together in New York City. But then when I go into San Francisco, even though they are a little bit more together, to see that they're still struggling too, made it seem like maybe there was some hope here that you know, we could get more together. I don't have any answers in that. You know, we just keep meeting you know, inviting everybody we could possibly think of to join us, and hopefully having events, like maybe sponsoring a conference here ourselves and stuff. But grassroots organizing is just very, very difficult. And because I know I live on Long Island, so I have to commute here to organize. So I've even, you know, like done a little bit of outreach, trying to like figure out how to draw tradeswomen together on Long Island. And there's no
success. There's a lot of them are having a lot of difficulties too.
Yeah. There's all of them, you know. Except for a few. A few might say, "Oh, I don't know. It never happened to me," you know. But I think they just haven't looked far enough.
So, what are your words of advice for other women? What would you say that you've learned from your experience that would be helpful to?
Well, it's really hard because I have to say it has taken a tremendous personal toll on me trying to do this. I mean, so that every day I question whether it's worth it or not. except that I just somewhere in my heart feel like if there was more of us, it'd be easier. And I just hope I'm not sacrificing myself personally to something that doesn't make any difference, but I just hope that it does. And I weigh that a lot. You know, I mean, sometimes I feel like, in good conscience, I couldn't tell another woman to go into the trades because the day-to-day experiences are so horrendous. But I believe so much that if there was more of us, like in World War II, when it was all women in the workplace, it would be a completely different scene. It would be a positive experience. But I don't know if we can ever turn it around that much, you know, if the pain that we experience in our daily lives is worth that, or if we should just like do it for a while when we're young and then do something else or something and just let people do it in the beginning or something.
I know that you are aware of the fact that the New York City Commission on Human Rights and the Office of Labor Services have been holding hearings about discrimination in the building trades in New York
mm-hmm.
City, discrimination in city hiring, discrimination in the unions and by contractors. And looking at the performance of the agencies that are supposed to be enforcing the laws that are on the books, what are your hopes for those hearings?
Well, I hope it does do some good. But the whole thing with agencies is it just takes a really long time. You know what I mean? Like maybe not even in your lifetime type of situation. You know, ultimately I believe that it does do some good, but in the immediate sense, it is sort of a wash because it doesn't really filter down to the people that need it the very most. You know, the people that need the good paying jobs and the work, it reaches them last. And they almost become like, it doesn't happen for them quick enough, although it's still positive that it happened because it'll make it happen a little bit easier, you know. But it's just also painfully slow that it just makes you want to scream, you know.
So before we conclude, do you have any other words of advice or?
I wish I could be more positive about it. I really do. But. It's sort of not my style. I don't know. I mean, for the women that are still doing it, I just hope that they can, you know, have it be good for themselves and not be consumed by it.
Well, I look at you and I see a woman who is a carpenter, which I think is such a wonderful trade. I mean, not knowing how to do it, but the idea of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a member of the Carpenters Union, which had lots of problems, but one of the biggest, most powerful unions in the city. And you're working for the city, the Board of Ed, and you've managed to get these skills, managed to get in the union, managed to get a civil service job, and managed to keep enough energy to keep fighting. So I think that we can't say it's a totally dismal story. We have to say that it's a positive story that has a lot of loose ends. A lot of things to be.
That's a nice way of putting it, and I agree.
Yeah. And I want to thank you for your interview.
Oh, well, thank you, Jane, for asking me what I think.